You're listening to Comic Timing, proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 9 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as David Price and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind time after time here on Comic Timing. On today's episode, it's just David and myself as we break from the norm and have our first bag and boarded reviews episode. We also announced the first ever Comic Timing contest. The winner could be you, if you submit something. Here now, the host of our show, myself, Ian Levinstein.
Hey folks, my name is Ian Levinstein, and welcome to Comic Timing. This is episode 9 of Comic Timing. We are one away from double digits. We're old. We're starting to get geriatric over here. Joining me, as always, is the man of 1,000 podcasts. He is David Price.
Hey, everybody.
What's going on, my friend?
Not too much. Well, I'm with you.
Nothing much. Just enjoying this lovely midnight hour as we are officially moving into Wednesday the 28th as we discuss this, because it is now no longer the day that it was, to make it sound nice and cryptic. This is the first time we're doing it just the two of us, as this is a sort of a laid-back episode as we introduce Bag It and Board It, is what we decided on calling it, as it's basically a retooled Buy It, Trade It, and Quarter Bin. Only we're not going to be talking about buying or trading or quarter binning. We're just going to be reviewing it and giving our suggestions on it. And in the long run, we'll say whether you should buy it or whether you should just, you know, borrow it from somewhere or something along those lines. And David, let everybody know what you're going to be reviewing today.
Cobb, Off the Leash number 1, Wonder Woman number 1, and The New Avengers volume 1 Breakout. It's an all number 1 episode for me today.
Well, congratulations on the number ones. You are number one, my friend.
All right.
Woohoo. And number one in the podcasting appearances, so it makes sense.
Moving right along.
I am going to be reviewing a book that I mentioned a couple podcasts back on our Mocha review. This is Teenagers from Mars. Now that I've read it, I realize it has nothing to do with Teenagers from Mars, and that's a good thing, and I'll get into that. Also, Wolverine number 41, which was a solo issue done by Stuart Moore and C.P. Smith before the current run that has just started with Humberto Ramos. This was the gap filler issue, as it were. And Strange Town number 1, Chyna Cluxton's brand new work out of Oni Press. And I love Chyna Cluxton, and I'll get into her as well. But David, let's start off with you. Let's get your review of Cobb Off the Leash number 1.
Okay. Well, the writer is Bo Smith. The art is by Eduardo Barreto. The cover, it's a black and white comic. The cover is colored by Josh Burcham, and letters by Tom B. Long, and the editor is Dan Taylor. It's a 32-page book, but you really couldn't tell that from the comic. It's a very nice, thick book. The packaging is great. It's got a nice, heavy cover, nice, sturdy pages, and the ink looks like it bled. The artwork looks like it bled into the pages, and that's a good thing. It's not a gritty book, but it's a tough book. It feels like it's right. You can tell it was written by Bo Smith, who calls himself the most manly man in comics. And
manlier than Alan Moore with that beard.
He could probably fight Alan Moore's beard. I don't know who'd win, but it would be a nice knockdown, drag out, I can tell you that.
I want to see that.
The book really has a great feel. The writing is great. The book has a independent comic from the 80s type feel, and I mean that as a compliment. I mean that in the best way, because what helps that 80s feel is the fact that it's written by Smith, who was a writer and an editor of comics in the 80s with Eclipse and then Todd McFarlane, and just he's worked for DC, so he spent a lot of time in the industry. He lives and breathes it. And Eduardo Barreto is somebody that I remember looking at his art in Atari Force or Teen Titans when Perez needed a break. So it's kind of like old home week when I was flipping through the book. Black and white really works for this book. The color wouldn't have they would have added to it probably, but it works really well as a black and white. It is a 3-issue mini. Smith has been promoting this like no tomorrow. And initially, you know, I don't know how IDW's practices are. I don't know if they, you know, every time they put out a book that they're planning on doing a trade like Marvel does. If a issue or title doesn't do well, you know, I don't know if they're going to say, okay, well, let's just package it as a trade and hopefully people will buy it, because I want people to buy this comic. It's not for kids, but it's but I mean, there's no harsh language, but it is a violent comic book. I do not know. Actually, before Monday, I could have said I do not know if this book is going to be traded, but apparently there is a rumor, and if you go to Amazon and look it up, they do say that there is a trade coming in December. So I don't know if that's legit or not, but that's what's out there at Amazon.
Yeah, I'm looking at Amazon right now, and it's right on there for a buying new of $17.99.
Yeah, so I don't know, but I don't know if that's IDW just putting, you know, filler out there. So, okay, if it is traded, super. I really do think, though, it's worth buying it as a single issue. I really enjoyed it. The story, basically, Cobb is just, you know, just one tough hombre. I mean, he's like a pit bull terrier. Once he, you know, chomps his jaws down on you, he ain't letting go. And we're kind of introduced to Cobb because he's in jail because he basically took on about, I don't know, maybe 8 guys that I think kicked the dog. They really shouldn't have done that. So he kind of just, you know, went ballistic on them, and he seems to have friends in high places, and it looks like the main enemy in the book is the Russian mafia. Okay. So seeing Cobb and looking to see what's going to happen as far as those paths crossing is going to make for an interesting read, and it's a quick read. I mean, it's, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean like, okay, you know, 5 minutes later, well, why did I just read that? I mean, time's going to fly, and you're going to go back and you're going to reread it because, you know, you just want to make sure that you've taken as much out of it as you can. So that's, you know, I recommend Cobb Off the Leash, number one. Go get it. Number two should be out in another week or two, I think. Had this since, actually, this came out the last Wednesday in May.
Okay.
So the second issue should be out very, very soon.
Now, you said that it's not for kids. Around how old do you think should be the age limit?
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom was rated PG-13, and they did that because of the violence of the blood in the movie. So, you know, this isn't really anything that no one's not seen before. You don't really see... You see Cobb beating up the guys. You see him breaking the guy's arm, but you don't see the bone come out through the skin. You don't see anybody meet their demise, but okay, you just, it's left up to your imagination.
So it's like television violence, basically. It doesn't go too far.
It does, yeah. It doesn't go too far. It leaves a lot up to the imagination, but it's all implied. There are guns in there, and, you know, and there are mean people in this book, so depending on how heavy you may get as far as, you know, the psychology of it, I'd say it's definitely a teenager and up, you know, 15, 16 I would go with.
All right, well, that sounds good to me right there. And you know what, speaking of teenagers, segue yet again, I think that's slowly becoming my catchphrase, whether I like it or not. Segue,
there you go.
We've got my first review here, and that, of course, is the complete collection of Teenagers from Mars.
Sounds interesting.
It is very, very, very interesting, to put it lightly. Basically, the best way to put this is, now that I've read the entire thing, I did talk about it a bit on a previous podcast, but from what I talked about in the first place, it's about this guy named Macon, okay? And Macon is your typical comic book fan, that's the best way to put it, and he works at Malmart to start things off. And, well, after being at Malmart for a certain amount of time, at one point, an angry mother comes up to him and immediately demands that she get her money back because they sold her son a violent comic book. And after that, he goes, what's the term? Yes, apeshit would be the proper term here, as the manager goes up to him and tells him, well, because this happened, I'm taking all of the comic books out of the store, and that's that. So he punches out his manager, which, as I mentioned before, is something that we've all wanted to do at least once in our lives, but, well, he actually did it. And from there, he obviously loses his job, and he meets up with this girl, and the girl's name is Madison, who's sort of like a typical punk girl, and they get together and basically put a hole through the Walmart. That's basically the best way to put it. They vandalize it, they throw a cart into the window, and write, I believe they put Comic Book Army on it. And immediately, this town that doesn't know anything about anything believes that there actually is a comic book army out there starting up a revolution.
Okay.
So there is a... They believe that there's a group of comic book fans out there, and they go on this giant crusade to burn and destroy every single comic book in the town. And at this point, Macon and Madison decide, well, maybe that comic book army was a good idea after all. And from there, things go entirely out of control. There's kids of all ages involved in this, and there's a lot of violence. So just like the sort of violence that you were talking about with Cobb, there's, I guess you could say, television violence involved here. Nothing that goes too severe, but there's a whole lot of getting beaten up, and there's some slightly sexual content in there, but nothing too severe. Well, also, I'd say probably the most powerful image in the entire book is a angry mob holding up pitchforks and torches with signs about how comics are evil, and all of them screaming at the exact same time, comics suck and we're going to burn them good.
Yes, because we all know comics promote illiteracy.
Yes, exactly. Burn them good.
Wow, you're damn right. Burn them good. That's going to be my new signature on all my forums.
Yes.
Burn them good.
I went in it thinking it was going to be about Teenagers from Mars, and I realized that Teenagers from Mars is in itself sort of an allegory for what a lot of people think comic book fans are from Mars.
Okay.
You know, we're all from another planet. We're all speaking some language that they've never heard before. And, well, these are all about the typical comic book fan. And there's one scene in here that I'm going to try and get to right now that I believe every single comic book fan should have to speak this oath at one time or another. Yes, here we go. Here is the oath in question. Do you, Maximilian, swear to buy comic books monthly, let them corrupt you fully, and defend them fearlessly? Say I do, David.
I do.
Do you promise to never let anyone tell you that you're too young, too old, or that you can't?
I do.
Then I welcome you to the Comic Book Liberation Army.
Woohoo!
This is an oath every single comic book fan should take in their lives. Because we've all felt this way before. This is basically saying, screw you to society. You can be as old as you want, you can be as young as you want, you can be collecting comics, and you're going to have a lot of fun doing so, as we all do. That's the reason why we're doing this podcast in the first place.
Damn, Skippy.
Yes, and I got to tell you, the art by Rob G in this is, it's great. You know, it's very simple, black and white line art that just, you know, every character is distinctive, nobody looks the same, which is something I love to see in a comic, because it's so often that I open up a comic book and everybody has the exact same face. And that's the most frustrating thing, too, because you're trying to figure out, you know, who this guy is without reading the word balloon saying, oh, you're such and such, but sometimes you can't. And this one, you can, which is definitely a plus.
That's cool.
Yes.
Very good.
And, well, also, a whole bunch of strange happenings in this, but yet again, everybody's wanted to see a Walmart vandalized at least once in their life, and, well, they get to see that here, too, only it's called Walmart, but it's got the exact same sign, so we've all felt that. Oh, yes.
Oh. Excellent.
And all I can say about this is that if you're a fan of comic books, if you're a fan of writing and drawing comic books, because they confiscate Macon's art at one point in this, and that's one of the main plots in this. They try to go into the police station and get his art back at one point, or they go on a covert mission, and it's a lot of fun. I highly, highly, highly recommend picking up Teenagers from Mars. You can get it on Amazon for $13.57. I'm sure it's at in-stock trades as well. But pick up Teenagers from Mars. Rick Spears is the writer of this. He's done a couple of other things. He did Dead West, and he also did Filler. These guys have collaborated with Brian Wood before. I know that. Rob G. certainly has. This is totally worth it. It's one of the most sarcastic and interesting and entertaining things I've ever read. Pick this baby up. You will not regret it.
Excellent.
There you have it with that. And next up for you, and we warn you, there will be spoilers involved with this upcoming review because, well, it's hard to review it without revealing some spoilers, but go ahead, David.
Wonder Woman number one. Now, okay, see, I'm going to try to refrain from saying anybody's name because let me run through the credits first. Okay, Wonder Woman number one. Title of the book, the title of this chapter, of this issue, is Who is Wonder Woman? The writer is Alan Heinberg. The pencils are done by Terry Dodson. The inks are by Rachel Dodson. The colorist is Alex Sinclair. Letters are by Rob Lee. Associate editor is Nachi Castro. Editor is Matt Idelson. We're crediting the logo design with Nancy Agami. And, of course, Wonder Woman is created by William Moulton Marston. The last time I read an actual Wonder Woman book was the second trade of Greg Rucka's run as writer. And I have the first two trades of that run. I really, really like them. I plan on continuing the run. I did not read the last couple issues of Wonder Woman. I still have not read Infinite Crisis 6 or 7, or have I started 52. So getting to page 2 and 3 in this comic book was a surprise to me.
Okay.
But I liked it. I liked it a lot. Just because it wasn't the Wonder Woman, it wasn't what I was expecting, didn't take anything away from it. I was quite pleased with this issue. The art as a whole is great, from pencils and inks and colors. It's a beautifully presented book. They said I haven't really followed what's been going on with Diana Prince over the last couple of months, but did
you at least know about, you know, the whole instance with Maxwell Ward and all that ahead of time?
Oh yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Good. All right. So at least you knew that much, because that was a major turning point for Wonder Woman.
There was the which they touched upon in Infinite Crisis 1, but they did a nice little recap early on about within the first 4 or 5 pages. Wonder Woman talks about, you know, basically Wonder Woman's past and the most recent past, and even though Donna Troy is Wonder Woman in this comic book, it made sense for me. It's very much like Dick Grayson becoming Batman if that were to happen. I have no problem with someone of Donna's caliber taking over the mantle, be it temporary or you know, just for the foreseeable future. That's fine with me. I enjoyed everybody in the comic. I enjoyed Steel. I enjoyed Steve Trevor playing the hapless male. I enjoyed Nemesis. I thought Cheetah came across as a really strong character in the few pages she was in there. And there is a Wonder Woman appearance, which is really nice to see, because anytime Terry Dodson wants to draw Wonder Woman is fine by me.
Oh yeah.
Overall, it was a very good first issue. I'm glad I picked it up. I'm a little leery, because although DC was good with this with Kevin Smith as far as writing goes, I know I've heard that when Heinberg was on the Young Avengers that it took a while for issues to come out.
Yeah, in fact, we're still waiting for one more issue of that. So.
Fabulous. So that gives me something to look forward to, I guess.
Yeah.
So I just hope. I mean, Dodson kept a really good track record on Harley Quinn. Obviously he wasn't to blame for Spider-Man Black Cat, the evil that men do.
Oh really? Yeah. I remember that. That title, that the one that took 70 years to come out, 80. I forget.
Pretty much. Yeah. 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 I think Kevin Smith's kid Harley Quinn has already had kids before that issue finished. But and Dodson's art was great on the Marvel Knights Spider-Man run. So I mean he's really good at being consistent. So I'm guessing it's going to be up to the writer. And as long as these issues, I mean obviously Wonder Woman is one of the Trinity. So you can't really have a Wonder Woman comic book be delayed or be late. So I'm really optimistic. The glass is really half full as far as I'm concerned with the writer, and I'll be picking up Wonder Woman in the for the foreseeable future. Definitely, it's hooked me, and I'm gonna walk for the ride. So if you're interested in the character, if you're interested in Wonder Girl or Troya or Donna Troy, I say pick up Wonder Woman number one.
So one thing that I definitely need to ask you quickly here, Dodson's art tends to be a bit cheesecake. Did you feel he kept that on a leash here, or did you feel it was still in the realm of, like, let's say, for instance, some of the art he did on Spider-Man Black Cat that was obvious, you know, chest shots and ass shots?
He kept it in check because, you know, with the exception of Steve Trevor and Steel and probably, you know, the assorted police in the background because it takes place at a museum and then a park next to the museum. With the exception of a couple of males, it's Giganta and Cheetah against Wonder Woman. And there were a couple of it's not as bad as, say, an episode of VIP, the old show with Pamela Anderson.
I haven't thought of that in 6 years. Thanks for reminding me of that.
Hey, man, you know, Dustin Nguyen from 21 Jump Street had to do something.
Oh, yeah.
To answer the question, no, I feel he kept it in check. It was not as blatant as the Spider-Man run.
Okay, all right. Well, that's actually pretty good to hear there, because I want to see my Wonder Woman in action, not her panties. So that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I think it is.
All right, moving on to my next review here. I have this is about, I'd say, it must be 2 months old now, 3 months old. This was in my opinion, the last issue of Wolverine, even though they picked up the issue numbers, the new series of Wolverine that is being done, you know, Wolverine number 42, it was Mark Guggenheim and Humberto Ramos, and that was the Civil War arc that's still going on, and a very different tone, a very different style. This is sort of the last old version of Wolverine you'll find here, and this is done by Stuart Moore and C.P. Smith. And if you've never seen C.P. Smith artwork before, what you have to know about him is, I guess the best way to describe him is take Dark Knight Returns era Frank Miller and make it a bit darker. That's the best way to describe C.P. Smith. And what you have here is a issue of Wolverine where for most of the issue, you don't even see Wolverine's face. You're seeing him in the shadows, or you're seeing a close-up of his eyes, and you just see him in action. And there's two characters that works really, really well with, Batman and Wolverine, when it's done right. Here, it is totally done right. The entire issue is washed in reds and blacks, which is the typical C.P. Smith style. And I'll give you the actual credits here for the full issue as I look at it right over here. This was, obviously, like I said, the writer was Stuart Moore, the artist is C.P. Smith, the letters done by VC's Randy Gentile, the assistant editor was Michael O'Connor, the editor was Axel Alonso, Joe Quesada, editor-in-chief, and Dan Buckley, the publisher. That says right there that C.P. Smith does all of his artwork. He does the inking, he does the coloring, the works right there. Basically, the plot line of this is Wolverine is asked by Black Panther to go into what is the worst country in the entire world to get a baby out of the country. And the baby is the child of the guy who was in charge of this country for a little while, a peacekeeping man who was just murdered by one of his generals. And what Black Panther wants to do is to get this baby out of the country so that someday she'll be able to grow up and change the country back to what it used to be, a peaceful and energized country. Right now, it's the bottom of the barrel. You see Wolverine employ tactics here that you've probably never seen Wolverine do, and yet it's totally inside of his character. I'll give you for an instance here. He offers some soldiers a smoke and mentions right off the bat that he's Canadian so that they won't believe he's American. For if he was American, he'd get shot on sight. And he talks up the soldiers to the point where they just let him by and he gets to go on. There's action sequences in there. There's a rain of arrows, which once again reminded me a lot of Frank Miller artwork, because I love it when Frank Miller, at least in the old days, would put a whole bunch of arrows onto a onto a page and just have them all rain down. And this is sort of like typical Frank Miller style with that. And the writing as well. I don't like comparing writers to other writers, but Stuart Moore is totally emulating 1980s Frank Miller here. That's probably the best way to put it. I would read this issue over and over again if I could. This is, to me, the quintessential Wolverine. You can't get better than that. And, again, I haven't picked up the Humberto Ramos stuff, so I really don't know what that's like, but this is a nitty-gritty Wolverine, I guess you could say sort of in the style of the Punisher in that way, that, you know, he gets in there, he gets the job done, and there's a reason why Wolverine is, you know, that he says he's the best at what he does. This issue proves why he is the best at what he does, and that's why you need to go out there and buy this. If you've skipped this particular issue, pick up this issue of Wolverine. It's Wolverine number 41. Like I said, you should be able to find it in the back issue bins pretty easily. Highly, highly, highly recommend Wolverine number 41.
So when you discuss the art about being Frank Miller-esque and it being Dark Knight, is it that kind of blocky, chunky style?
You know what? I guess, no. You could say it's a bit more streamlined than that. Sort of. You know what?
It's like his Daredevil works?
Yeah, yeah.
A little cleaner.
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely a little cleaner. Closer to something that you might find out of John Romita Jr.
Okay.
But not nearly as blocky as what John Romita Jr. is now.
John Romita Jr. probably inked by Klaus Janson.
There you go. Yeah, that's the best way to put that, yeah.
And as you're describing Wolverine's appearance, or his appearances in this book, this sounds like Miller's last issue on the Wolverine run.
Pretty much.
Where he was in the concentration camp, and you really never saw much of Wolverine, or if you did see his full body, it was in the shadows.
Which again, was one of my favorite Wolverine issues. So that's what I like to see out of Wolverine. You know, the stealthy, sort of secret mission Wolverine, and, you know, using all of his talents at once, because it's so often where you just see him, you know, gut a guy with his claws and then runs off. No, he's meant to, you know, he has that training to go in there and do the missions that other people can't. And that's exactly what he's doing right here. Black Panther turned to the new Avengers, and Wolverine said, I'll do it. And
okay,
that works.
Now that you just said that about Black Panther with the new Avengers, because the last time I remember Black Panther and Wolverine being in the same room was during the Priest run.
Yeah.
Enemy of the State 2 was the storyline.
Okay.
And Panther went to Wolverine. He needed Logan's help.
Yeah.
And it was pretty much a fight against Iron Man, and it was there was some backhanded stuff going on, and Panther's a cool cucumber. He just, you know, he doesn't sweat, doesn't deviate from the plan. So it really worked having Wolverine work with Panther in that storyline. I'm just, when you say Black Panther went to Wolverine and said, hey, could you go to this country, I'm just trying to see if it makes sense as far as the story goes and as far as the characters go.
Yeah, well, in this also, well, recently, I mean, with the changes in Black Panther's character, I mean, obviously with the whole wedding angle with Storm and all that, and you've seen that he has changed a bit in the way that he does actually, you know, run things, but he has also in the past, you know, either with the Fantastic Four or with the Avengers, turned to them for assistance, and one of those particular members of the Avengers or New Avengers or Fantastic Four goes and helps him out on that mission. This is sort of what you're seeing here. You'd never see Black Panther in this. And again, I felt that that was also key because that all happened before this issue. You know, had this started off in a conference room with, you know, Black Panther actually addressing everybody and then nobody, you know, speaks up and then Wolverine just stands up and says, all right, I'll do it, it wouldn't have been nearly as effective as if it starts off the way it does. It starts off on the plane, right when Wolverine's dropping himself into the actual area. And
okay.
I think, actually, as I thumb through it now, I'm trying to check to see right now whether or not it was actually, yeah, Panther's on the plane with him, okay? And it says here, the line actually, I know the drill, Panther, just get me as close as you can, and Logan, thank you, only a man of your experience can pull this off. Thank me when it's done, Panther, because I ain't never experienced a job like this before.
Okay.
So there you go with that. So, again, I have a feeling that he knew that he needed to turn to the new Avengers for help for this particular instance, and Wolverine was the guy who stepped up and said, well, if you need this, this is my expertise, let's roll.
Okay.
All right, that's the best way to put it. Because I haven't read the Priest run, so I have to some of these days. I have to one of these days because I know how great it is, but I haven't read that.
He wrote every issue except for two.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I read the end of his run, because I did read when the other guy was in the Panther suit.
Casper Cole,
yeah. And eventually he became, what did he become after that?
White Tiger,
that's what I thought, yeah. I did read the last, like, I'd say maybe 10 issues, but I need to read the earlier issues because I know how amazing those are. I just haven't had a chance to pick them up yet because I'm a huge Priest fan myself. It just took me a while to actually realize I was, and once I did, by then it was too little too late. It's impossible to find those issues, so.
I won mine off of eBay.
Well, I'll get.
I went on a Priest binge and I picked that up and Quantum and Woody and the Ray and just picked up some books that I had ages ago that he'd written. So yeah, they're out there, and if whatever I can find for you, I'll let you know.
Awesome, sounds good to me. Well, are they traded? His early issues?
There are two traded: okay. Enemy of the State and Enemy of the State One.
Okay.
Although wait, maybe three. I don't know actually. The first storyline with art by Mark Texiera, that's traded.
Okay.
And Enemy of the State is traded because during the issues of Enemy of the State 2, they said that there were house ads and the letters page was telling people to pick up the trade of the first Enemy of the State. So I know there's at least two.
Okay. Yeah. Right now on Amazon, I'm seeing Black Panther the Client and Black Panther Enemy of the State.
Yeah, the Client is the Tex artwork.
Uh-huh.
Enemy of the State is Sal Velluto and Bob Almond as on pencils and inks. That's a really good storyline as well. But every issue has something. So yeah, if you can get the issues at a decent enough price, because I did. I mean, the guy wasn't trying to rip anybody off. Anybody that was bidding on it. So.
Okay.
It wasn't too bad for me, but it's a well written story. I mean, the man knows how to write. But The Client is a great intro to the new take on Black Panther. The issues that the Enemy of the State ran in were not immediately following The Client, so
okay.
there are a few issues in between that they didn't trade. So
I gotcha.
There might be some questions raised during Enemy of the State that you may need answered if you didn't read the issues in between. But in any case, that definitely get those when you can.
Conventions and eBay will be my friend when it comes to this.
That's right.
Definitely, without a doubt. Now, speaking of the new Avengers.
And Wolverine, yes.
Yes.
Oh, man. The new Avengers Volume 1 Breakout, the first trade collecting New Avengers 1 through 6. Writer is Brian Michael Bendis, pencils by David Finch, inks by Danny Mickey with Mark Morales, Alan Martinez, and Victor Olazaba. Colors are by Frank DeArmada. Letters are Richard Starkings and Comic Crafts, Albert Deschen. Assistant editor Nicole Wiley, Molly Laser, and Stephanie Moore. Associate editor Andy Schmidt. Editor is Tom Brevoort. Editor-in-chief is Joe Quesada. And the publisher is Dan Buckley. There were plenty of editors on this book. And I think, you know, usually too many cooks spoil the pot. But in this case, I think those editors were needed. I was surprised. I kept putting off reading the new Avengers because of everybody and their praise for Bendis. You know, I figure he's got enough fans, he's got enough followers, he doesn't need me. I'll take my time in getting around to reading it. And I did, and I really have no issues with the story. I have issues with the presentation of the trade, which I'll get to, but as far as the story goes, it was a nice read. I probably would have been a little peeved reading this as a monthly book. I'm glad I read it in the trade format. It made a lot more sense reading all six issues.
I wish
back
I would have waited
back.
For trade, tell you the truth.
It seems to have just been a much smoother read. And knowing, you know, not worrying about, you know, oh my God, that's all they did this month, and just knowing that what you're reading is, it things are just neat. It doesn't start off with what I wish it would start off with, but you see Matt Murdock, you see Jessica Drew, the former Spider-Woman, and you see Luke Cage, and they're all visiting the Raft, which is Rikers with a Y, maximum security installation.
Yeah.
Where they keep all the big bads, you say they were underwater or?
They're just on an island. They're on an island, yeah.
Okay. And they're all drugged up. Nobody can really activate their powers. For example, the purple man is on the raft and he ain't doing nothing to nobody. Except, as what happens with all prison stories, there's a breakout. Basically, a few heroes get together, such as the three we just mentioned, Daredevil, Spider-Woman, and Power Man, are already on the island, are already on the raft. Spidey makes his way out there. Captain America makes his way out there. During a fight scene, Iron Man shows up. You have the Sentry. Doesn't look like he does much, because he was there. He basically put himself in prison. And these five heroes pretty much have to take everybody on their own. Iron Man comes in, saves Captain America. And after they capture as many of the villains and put them back on the raft, the heroes regroup. Basically, they talk about... Actually, before they regroup, Captain America goes around to everybody that was on the raft and thinks that it would be great if they all got together to become a group. Everybody says yes, except for Daredevil. And they just basically have to go and find all the other villains that... They're going to start to search for the villains that escaped, except they find out that Electro was the person that caused the breakout. So they go after Electro. They end up in the Savage Land, which is where we meet Wolverine. I am jumping around because I don't want anybody to be spoiled. Yeah. And they just think it'd be a really swell idea if they all just hung out together. So, like I said, I did enjoy the story. It laid down the groundwork for some things that... Not reading the monthly issues, I don't know if they've explained anything. If these are Claremont style plots, which will take 22 years to resolve, or if these are actually being addressed as the issues go on, as far as Jessica Drew and especially now at Civil War, I don't know how the team is holding up. But I was impressed. I do like it. The art didn't bother me as much as I thought it would. David Finch's artwork in New Avengers is a lot smoother to me than the two issues of Moon Knight I've seen so far. I think Bendis did a real good job of capturing the personalities of all the characters. The interaction among everybody was great. My peeves with the presentation of the trade, it would have been really, really nice aside from in the inside front cover, there are four trades pictured. Avengers Disassembled, Avengers Disassembled Thor, Avengers Disassembled Captain America, and Avengers Disassembled Iron Man. You have these four trades that I guess Marvel suggests to you, and then apparently I guess on the first page of the first issue you have four panels telling you what the worst day in Avengers history was. I didn't get much out of those four panels. It would have been really nice to know what the hell happened to the Avengers. Why do we need the new Avengers? What happened to the old Avengers? Yeah. Where's Wonder Man? Where's Vision? Where's Hawkeye? Where are guys that I remember reading when I was reading the Avengers? And with the exception of Captain America and Iron Man, there ain't none of them in here. So I was at a loss for that. What really would have been nice is if they did include a little bit of recap, a little bit of, take a couple of pages at the beginning to write an introduction to explain what happened, what the whole disassemble thing was about. That would have helped, because there are at least two pages, there may be more, but there are at least two pages, it looks like there's at least three, where there's a dark red page with lightning and a big giant A for Avengers, so that if they're on the left side of the page, the right-hand side of the page was a cover, so it was, which is fine. But what really gets me is when you're reading the story and, hey, there's a big giant A, and then you turn the page and there's a double page spread. Basically, naturally, in a monthly issue, that would be an ad. That's fine if the next page is a double page spread, but in a trade, I don't need there to be a page break.
Yeah.
I would really, really enjoy it if the page layout was just thought out a little bit better when it came to this trade. So, I'm still really not over that, even though I've had the trade for a couple months now, and I've read it once, flipped through it a couple of times. That part always gets to me, so I'm not going to let him go for that anytime soon. If you can get by just having a big giant A in the middle of a page or in the middle of two pages when, you know, you really wouldn't expect it in a trade because what the hell am I pausing for? And if you know what happened to the old Avengers before the new Avengers, then... this is the new Avengers by Bendis. I'm probably the last person to read this, so everybody's already got this. So you don't need my recommendation. But
Wait. Adam Murdo still hasn't read it. So
okay, yeah. All right. Well, there you go. I say go for it. I did enjoy it. I'll eventually get to volume two, and I'll keep reading it when I can. It's not something that I'm going to rush out to get. I don't need to know what happened in issue seven, but I am intrigued. I was pleasantly surprised. So, score one for Brian Michael Bendis.
Okay, so those four recap panels that you talked about, did they actually mention anything about Scarlet Witch in that whatsoever? Or
they said, okay, the first panel is the front gate of Avengers Mansion, and there's an explosion. Uh-huh. Above it says, "It was the worst day in Avengers history." Second panel is the Scarlet Witch, who seems to be doing the Batusi. It says, "The Scarlet Witch suffered a total nervous breakdown after losing control of her reality-altering powers." The third panel is a... I don't know how old this Perez-drawn image is, but it's a panel with Wonder Man, looks like Hank Pym, Janet Van Dyne, Captain America, Iron Man, Cat Beast, and Warbird, I think. And I do not know who that guy is behind Beast. It says, "In the chaos created around the breakdown, beloved Avengers, Hawkeye, Ant-Man, and the Vision lost their lives." And then there is a dark panel with everything in shadows and silhouettes. You have a Quinjet and a bunch of heroes flying away from the building. And it says, "Many of the other Avengers were hurt, both emotionally and physically. Without funding to keep going, the rest of the team quietly disbanded." And that was 6 months ago.
Wow. They really could have explained a lot more there, actually.
I would... Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Because the only part of Avengers Disassembled that I remember reading were any of the issues that had to do with Captain America and the Falcon. Uh-huh. And I have a couple of issues of... They did a Fantastic Four Disassembled couple of issues during the Wade and Wieringo run, but I don't know really how much that really had to tie into the whole Disassembled
story. That had a Disassembled on it for the sake of having a Disassembled. It really had very little to do with the title.
So it was like the only Marvel comic they didn't want to have left out. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said, aside from not knowing what happened to my old Avengers, I did think it was a pretty neat story. I mean, you know, I'm almost inclined to just, you know, think of it as a what if my Avengers never existed kind of thing.
And they should bring back What If, but that's an episode for another time.
That's right.
I want my What If back, damn it. what if Spider-Man had three eyes and five legs? That's what I'm talking about.
Oh man.
Oh boy. Well, that's kind of strange. Hey, speaking of strange.
Yes, Segway King.
Strange Town number 1 by Chinna Cluxton of Blue Monday fame and Ian Shaughnessy, I believe that's how you pronounce it. Those are the co-writers, and Chinna Cluxton does the art. And I'll read the little blurb they have here on the Oni Press website. 10-year-old Venora Finnar washed onto the Oregon shore in 1973. Nobody in the coastal town of Grangeton knows where she came from, nor does anyone bother to ask. In Strange Town, as the locals call it, odd is the norm, and anything ordinary might as well be extraordinary by its rarity. Now in her 20s, Venora must figure out what to do if you're too strange for Strange Town. And this does indeed take place about 11 years after she washed ashore. And we really don't know anything about her background, like why she's there or anything along those lines. We don't know anything more than what the citizens of Grangetown know. We're introduced to her getting an apartment with a whole bunch of these folks that are really, really, really weird. And my favorite character is the dog.
Okay.
I gotta say, because the dog is one of those typical lazy dogs that's more smart than you think it is. And there's one scene where it's sitting in front of the door, and one of the residents of the apartment complex, I think it's like an apartment complex at least, just might be a giant place with a whole bunch of different rooms and all that, but this one character's trying to get in, and she ends up going through the wall because the dog won't move. And then later on, the owner just says, all right, you can move now, and the dog moves away. So it was basically just sitting there to piss off the tenant, which was sort of funny. But I really like the character of Venora because she's quiet, she's reserved, and she's basically she's the sore thumb here. In an entire town called Strange Town, she's the one that sticks out. Which is sort of interesting right there, because you would think that, well, as a main character, she'd fit right in. But no, she really, you could tell, she doesn't belong there with everybody else. She's trying to get some friends, and she already has. And from the looks of things, where she's living is also a restaurant for a whole bunch of dock workers. And a whole bunch of people end up coming in. And at the end, you know, of course, she catches the eye of her possibly soon-to-be love interest. We don't know what's going to happen, but she does catch the eye of somebody, and she runs in the opposite direction, which makes us believe that she must have some sort of previous relationship with this guy, or she just could be terrified of actually meeting somebody. We don't know. That's the intrigue here. It's a typical Chyna Cluxton comic. That's the best way to put it, because Chyna loves weird. And, well, she's presenting that right there. I mean, there's a reason why there was a guy that absolutely nobody could see, an animal that nobody could see in Blue Monday named Seamus, because she loves putting the weird in there. And she's done it yet again. That's what Strange Town's all about. I am incredibly intrigued to find out what's going to happen in the next couple of issues here, because, again, it's Chyna Cluxton, and I will read anything she puts out, because Blue Monday's great, Strange Town's great, and something she does that no other writer does is, on a couple of scenes, she actually puts down what songs you should be listening to while reading this page.
Nice.
So it's almost as if this is a storyboard for a television show. You're playing it out just as if there was a soundtrack in the background. And she does that with Blue Monday, and she did that also with Scooter Girl, the other book that she did, and she's doing it here again. Strange Town is definitely worth it if you're a fan of Chyna Cluxton. It might take some getting used to if you're not used to her style, but once you get in there, there's a lot of humor to be found and a lot of oddities. So I liked it. So pick it up.
Excellent. Now, I do have one question. Yeah. I've always thought her name was Chyna.
It might be.
Okay.
But I've never heard people speak it out loud, so it's like Mark Miller, Mark Millar to me. I'm assuming it's Chyna, but it could be Chyna. So it's C-H-Y-N-N-A, so that's why I'm wondering whether it's Chyna or Chyna, because I've never really seen it spelled that way.
I thought there was one N. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
So I'll go Chyna for now. If I ever do meet her in real life, I'll have to ask, are you Chyna or Chyna? But nevertheless, go and pick up Strange Town if you can. And it should be
excellent.
Pretty easy to find. It's only a couple months old. So voila, there you have it.
Fabulous. Great job.
Thank you very much. And, well, there's three issues from all of us one compilation from both of us, and then two regular issues that you guys should go ahead and pick up. And this is the perfect episode to announce this. We're going to be premiering a new segment in a couple of weeks. And that segment we have come to call 22 Pages. And what 22 Pages is I know a lot of shows like to put in a trade that everybody should go and pick up. Well, we're going to do the budget version of that. We're going to tell everybody to go ahead and pick up one particular issue that we're then going to discuss on the show as part of a regular episode. We'll work it into the story that we're going to be discussing there. And what we've decided to choose is Annihilation Number 1. Now, if you go to DCBS, if you're a regular DCBS guy, you can add this to your order pretty easily. The product code, for those of you ordering from previews, is JUN061945. And on DCBS, you can get it for 74 cents. The regular price is $2.99. This will be hitting the shelves on July 20th. So you do have a bit of leniency there to go ahead and pick it up. And we'll give about 2 weeks or so before we go ahead and actually do this. So this is the sort of thing that we're giving a lot of time for because we want people to actually go out there and read Annihilation number one, then post on the forums, and we'll go ahead and read your thoughts on it. We'll have our thoughts on it as well. So if you want to pick it up at DCBS, you can over at dcbservice.com or go ahead to your regular comic book shop and product code JUN06-1945, or just go ahead and pick it up on the shelves, either way. But we'll be premiering 22 pages once Annihilation number one comes out. And again, this was something that David was not going to pick up, so yet again, we're making him spend more money. Isn't that great, David?
Yeah, really, really great. My only concern is if we ever decide to do an issue of Fell or Casanova, we might have to change the name of it, since those are basically 16-page comic books.
Well, then that for that particular episode, we'll have to do like 22 minus 5 or something like that. You know, we'll have to figure that out. We'll start doing math on the show, which will be very amusing to see us like working it out on our heads without going to the calculator.
Oh, that's scary.
Oh yeah. And along with 22 pages, we're also premiering our first contest. Yay! Woohoo! Yay!
Yay!
Raise the roof, everybody. And anyway, if you do have to raise the roof, then you might have to call a contractor. Thank you very much for that corny joke. Anyway, we will be premiering our first contest. Our first contest is going to be Design Us iTunes Art. Now, iTunes Art is 300 by 300 in size, for those of you who know that. And what we're looking for is just a nice logo that we can put on our particular episodes of Comic Timing, because the current iTunes art we have, I made in approximately 5 minutes, and I know it looks like crap, but we'd like to actually have some professional-looking art here for that. And we're going to, depending on how many of these mini posters that Wally Wahlbecker is gracious enough to be giving us, will depend on how many we actually give out, but Wally is going to be sending me off the mini posters to X-Men 3 that he has decided to send us, and the deadline for this will be August 8th. So we're giving you guys some time to actually go ahead and do this. That's a little bit more than a month, about a month and 2 weeks. So go ahead and give us a shot here, and we're going to post on the forums about this contest as well, so you can post your submissions on the forums, and then please send us a high-quality version of the image over to comictiming@gmail.com, so we can then put it inside of our enclosures, and the world will be happy, and the day will be saved, and all will be right with it.
Excellent.
Excellent indeed. Any announcements you have for anybody, David?
Buy comics, and listen to podcasts, and try to give everybody on the Comics Podcast Network a shot. See if there's something out there that you like that you may not already be listening to. You might be surprised at what you hear, and really don't be too upset if you end up spending more money than you thought.
Exactly, because that's all part of it. So whether you like it or not, you're going to end up buying at least one thing that you never thought you would. And that's all part of the podcast, and that is over at comicspodcasts.com, by the way, for anybody who does not know that, and that's S's at the end, comicspodcasts.com. Whole lot of great content on there, including us and a whole bunch of others, so check that out over there.
Sure.
Exactly. And that's pretty much it for this particular episode, so we're going to wrap things up here. As always, the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. And don't forget to vote for us over at Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and at the main page. We are a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcasts.com. And I believe that's now the 8th time we've mentioned Comics Podcast Network. But that's a good thing, because the more people who know about the Comics Podcast Network, the better, in my mind. And we are an affiliate of The Furnace, which you can find over at thewardshaper.com. So anybody who wants to check out thewardshaper.com, The Furnace is a great site for gaming and for comic book news, so go ahead and do that. And don't forget to send us your iTunes reviews over in iTunes, so if you ever want to do a review, you can. And as always, there's always time for comics.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. I'll be pausing here for a minute as I actually look for it. I should have been prepared. That would have been nice. Preparation.
That's the magic of post-production.
You're damn right. This whole thing never happened.
Is it in Brightest Day and Blackest Night?
Yes, indeed. No evil shall escape my might. And that Green Lantern's light that seems to be coming in through the window right now makes a lot of sense.
See, you did it wrong. It's no evil shall escape my sight.
Ah, damn it. I always screw that up, too. Sight and might. Oh, God.